I find myself blushing at the compliment. It's so surreal to think that this is actually my father staring at me with this odd kind of pride. He takes my arm and helps me up the wide steps. The moment we walk inside, I see Reed descending the staircase. He looks so good in his black tuxedo that I have to stop myself from drooling. "Hey, Reed, you look nice," I say blandly, because Steve is standing right beside me.
"You look nice, too,"
he answers in an equally indifferent voice. But his heated gaze says otherwise.
"I'll be in Callum's study," Steve tells us. "Ella, come get me when your date arrives."
He disappears down the hall, which surprises me since I know he doesn't like it when I'm alone with Reed. And he has a reason not to like it. The moment he's gone, Reed bends down and presses his mouth on my neck. He lays a searing kiss at my pulse point that has my knees buckling. Then he backs me up against the wall and continues his exploration of all the skin conveniently exposed by the strapless sweetheart neckline. My hands fall onto the crisp cotton of his dress shirt. The idea of stripping him out of his clothes grows more appealing by the second. Unfortunately, the sound of an engine roaring outside pops that balloon. At the honk of the horn, Reed lifts his head from my upper chest reluctantly.
"Your date's here."
"No kiss on the lips," I smile, trying to catch my breath. His thumb presses at the corner of my mouth.
"Didn't want to mess up your lipstick."
"Mess away," I invite. His lips curve up.
"There's so much more of your body I'd like to have my mouth on right now."
His hand falls to the top of my breast, still damp from his kisses. I gasp as one long finger slides under the tightly corseted body to swipe across my nipple.
"Hey, man, are you mauling my date?"
Wade demands as he bursts through the front doors without knocking. Reed sighs, removes his hand, and rocks back on his heels.
"I'm expressing my appreciation for my girlfriend's rocking bod."
I take a deep, calming breath before turning to face Wade. Thankfully, the bodice of my dress is thick enough that my excited state doesn't show through the silk. "If you're my date, you better have brought me an awesome floral arrangement. Someone told me you can tell the size of a guy's dick based on the amount of flowers he buys." Wade stops short, his eyes falling to the long white box in his hands.
"Really? They say that?"
Reed and Wade exchange alarmed glances, and I nearly die laughing at them.
"You're an evil woman."
Wade marches past me without even handing me the box. We all turn at the sound of footsteps on the stairs. Easton and the twins appear, each clad in his own tux. Sawyer nods when he sees me and Wade.
"Finally, let's get this show on the road. We need to pick up Lauren."
Everyone marches out the door, with Easton and me taking up the rear. Smiling, he reaches out and flicks my skirt.
"I thought you'd go for something slinky and sexy."
"I've worn slutty clothes for a long time. I've never done princess." I shake out the dress, which I fell in love with the moment I removed it from the box. The bare shoulders give me all the sexy I need, but even if it were high-necked and long-sleeved, I'd still be obsessed with the full skirt and the thousands of layers of chiffon that swish around my legs as I walk. Easton grins.
"You're always doing the opposite of what anyone expects. The girls will be killing themselves."
"I'm just doing what I want. They should too." I didn't choose the dress because I wanted to tweak anyone's noses at Aster. I picked this one because it looked like a dream. And if this is the only winter formal I'll ever be attending with Reed, even though he isn't technically my date, I wanted to wear the most beautiful gown on the earth.
"Doesn't matter. If you wore a tight dress, they'd call you a slut. And now they're going to call you something else, but I'm going to take care of you while Reed's away."
Easton's declaration makes me feel warm inside. Not because I need watching over, but because I sense he's growing up a little. In a burst of insight, I realize that Easton needs someone to watch over and take care of. I'm not going to be that person. But until he finds her, we can watch out for each other. And I'll take care of you too. I promise.
Deal.
We shake on it. Steve and Callum wander outside just as we reach the courtyard.
You kids taking off now?
Callum calls.
Yup,
Easton answers. Wade stops by Steve's Bugatti. He smooths a hand above the hood, not daring to lay his palm on the steel.
I think you should let me drive this, Mr. O'Halloran, for your daughter's sake.
I think you should stop breathing on my $2 million vehicle, Mr. Carlyle, and take my daughter to the dance.
Holy Mother of Mary, I gape at my father.
$2 million?
I echo. All of the men look at me like I'm ridiculous for asking, but they're the ridiculous ones. $2 million for a car? These people have way too much money.
It was worth a shot.
Grinning, Wade jogs to his own sports car and holds open the door for me.
Your chariot awaits. Hey, listen,
Wade says, 15 minutes later, as we idle behind a long line of cars, waiting to turn into the country club.
I want you to know that you can come to me if you have any problems.
I frown. What do you mean?
Next semester, he clarifies. After, Reed's gone.
What problems do you anticipate me having? Like, if I forget a tampon, will you have extras in your locker? He jerks his head around.
Reed keeps tampons in his locker for you?
No, you dumbass, but that's about how stupid your statement is. I can take care of myself. His words remind me eerily of Easton's, though, and a note of suspicion strikes me.
Did Reed put you up to this?
Wade looks out the window.
Did Reed put me up to what?
Don't play dumb. His shoulders sag.
Okay, maybe.
Is he going to dictate instructions from his prison cell like some mafia don? Reed's overprotectiveness will probably only get worse when he can't see me every day. I guess it should make me feel suffocated, and for some girls maybe it would, but for me, it's comforting. I'm not going to let him control my life, but I don't mind the gesture.
I don't know, maybe?
Wade seems unbothered by this. He shifts and slides a sly glance in my direction.
So, conjugal visits?
I roll my eyes. What is it with you guys and conjugal visits?
Dunno.
He says again.
Seems kinky.
His eyes become unfocused as he engages in some fantasy regarding jail cells and sex games. And because I don't want to sit next to Wade while he's playing some porno in his head, I ask, speaking of kinky, what's up with you and Val? His lips tighten into a rigid line. Cat got your tongue? I taunt, but his mouth stays glued shut. He'll talk about anything but Val, huh? Very, very interesting. Fine, don't talk, but just know that Val's an awesome girl. Don't play with her. It's not an overt threat, but Wade should know me by now. I'll hurt him if he hurts her.
Is that what you think? He bursts out. That I'm the problem?
Women, he mutters, and then adds something under his breath that I can't make out. I raise my eyebrows, but he turns up the music, and I drop the subject, because his outburst is answer enough. By the time we make the turn into the Bayview Country Club property, Wade's natural good humor has resurfaced. He loses his stiffness, and his characteristic easy smile is back on his face.
Sorry I snapped at you. Val and I are complicated.
I'm sorry I pried. I just love Val and want her to be happy.
How about me?
He says in mock offense.
Do you want me to be happy?
Of course. I reach out and squeeze his hand. I want everyone to be happy.
Even Jordan?
Especially her, I tell him as he pulls up in front of the club's entrance. If she's happy, I think she'd be less of a terror. He snorts in disagreement.
Doubtful. She feeds off the fear and unhappiness of others.
The valet opens my door before I can respond, but Wade's assessment is depressingly correct. Jordan does seem to be happiest when everyone around her is miserable.
Be careful. It's my baby,
Wade tells the valet as he tosses his keys over. Then he pats the hood and winks at me.
Cars are less complicated than women.
Can't have a conjugal visit with a car, I remind him. He snickers.
Good point.
I haven't been to the country club before, so I don't know what it looks like when it's not decked out in the Astor Park blue and gold, but it's pretty tonight. Wide swaths of white fabric hang from the center and outward, making the room look like a huge, luxurious tent. Along the white fabric hang tiny Christmas lights. Decorating the room are round tables covered with pristine white tablecloths and chairs wearing giant shiny blue and gold ribbons. But despite the long line of cars outside, the room is surprisingly empty. Where is everyone? I ask my date.
You'll see,
Wade says cryptically, leading me to a table at the entry. Behind the table, a man and a woman dressed in black suits rise as we approach.
Welcome to the Astor Park Prep Winter Formal, chirps the lady. Name, please.
Wade Carlyle and Ella.
He stops and looks at me questioningly.
Royal? Harper? O'Halloran?
I have an Ella Harper.
The woman holds out a silk bag and a mini bottle of sparkling cider with my name on it.
What's this? I ask slowly.
Wade grabs everything and moves me away from the table so the couple behind us can get their goodies. He tucks the bottles in one pocket and the silk bags in the other.
You're given $500 worth of chips to play in here.
Here ends up being a room filled with felt-covered gaming tables and so many people that I feel a bit suffocated. The girls are beautifully dressed, most of them wearing slinky gowns with slits up the side. The guys are wearing black tuxes. It looks like a movie set.
I wish Val was here, I whisper.
I think Wade says me too, but I'm not completely sure.
So, I use the chips to play these games? I wave a hand toward the casino tables, trying to take both our minds off our missing friend.
Yep, and then you bid on stuff.
We wander in. There are two tables, one where kids are playing poker, and another where they're playing blackjack.
What kind of stuff?
Trips, jewelry, experiences.
Who pays for it?
It's all donated, but your chips are paid for by a parent or guardian, I guess.
Is this why there's no dancing?
Deeper in the room, I see a table full of purses, envelopes, and baskets. It looks like a raffle table at a bingo hall, only much nicer.
There's dancing in the dinner area.
I vaguely recall a small open square in the middle of the tables.
But that space is so small.
No one dances.
Well, duh. Who wants to dance when you could gamble?
When did this start?
Maybe 10 years ago?
Wade slaps the hands of one of the football players as we pass by. None of the guys danced, and a huge number of them just stopped coming altogether,
so some smarty set this casino thing up.
Boom, boys were back in town. We stop in front of a table. The items range from purses to jewelry to placards with the words Aspen and Las Vegas and Puerto Vallarta written on them.
Those must be the experiences Wade referenced.
None of these is 500. I tell him, pointing to the bolded numbers on the bottom of each explanation sheet.
Right, well, you're supposed to win the chips and then your date's supposed to give you his.
That's not sexist, I mutter under my breath. Wade snorts.
Astor Prep's not real enlightened. You're just figuring that out?
I wonder if this is why Val didn't come. On top of the dress, there's the added cost of buying $500 worth of chips to buy what I presume to be worthless stuff.
Sucks if you're a scholarship student.
Wade frowns.
You don't have to play.
I turn to inspect the room. I don't see Liam Hunter here either. Isn't he a scholarship student like Val?
Huh.
Wade's eyes widen as the realization sinks in of who exactly attends these charity dances. The whole setup reeks of rich kids keeping the poor kids out, and some of the magical gauze that covers the place is torn away. Impatiently, I check the door.
Where's Reed?
Everything's more tolerable when he's around. Only if he has his way, he won't be around much longer. I shove that depressing thought aside.
Wade shrugs.
He'll be late. Jordan likes to make an entrance.
Chapter 31. Read. You're late, Jordan snaps as she throws open the mansion's door. I check my watch. A whole minute late, I answer, rolling my eyes. And even though her sharp tone scrapes across my nerves, this devil's bargain Ella made was so fucking worth it. It's not going to kill me to be civil. Are you ready to go? I ask politely. Jordan's gaze rakes over me. Where's your gold tie? That's not the question I expected. I peer down at the black one hanging down my front. I don't think I own a gold tie. Her eyes narrow into thin strips. Part of the deal is that you wear a gold tie to match my dress. I follow her hand as she Vanna Whites it down her body, which is wrapped in what looks like gold tissue. Really thin gold tissue. Holy hell, are her nipples visible? I try not to stare, but it's not easy. I catch a glimpse of Jordan's smug face as I avert my eyes.
Like what you see?
Your tits? Every girl's got a pair, Jordan. Her smirk turns to a sneer. Tell Ella the deal's off and she still owes me. The door starts to close on my face. I slap a hand on the wood frame and push my way in. Be nice, Reed. It's not going to kill you to be nice to this chick. You look nice, I manage to grind out.
Ah, there you go.
The demon pats my arm, and it takes a lot of effort on my part not to flinch.
Was that so hard?
Yes, really hard. And I don't want to be touched by her or any other girl whose name isn't Ella Harper. But I don't say that to Jordan. Instead, I repeat my question. Are you ready? Considering she was mad that I was late, I expect her to say yes, but she doesn't. We're not going until you put on a gold tie. For fuck's sake, what the hell is wrong with this girl? I don't have one, and even if I did, I'm not driving 20 minutes to get it. Get your purse or whatever else you need, and let's go. She lifts her chin.
No, we're taking pictures first.
Mom! She yells. Reed Royal is here. We're ready for pictures. Pinching the bridge of my nose, I pray for patience. I'm not standing around like a mannequin so that Jordan can memorialize this farce of a date. I didn't sign up for pictures. I'm here to take you to the dance. That's the deal.
The deal is what I say it is, Jordan hisses.
We both know Ella's the only person who would actually honor this deal. The rest of Aster would tell you to go fuck yourself. Including me, but I'm trying to keep my nose clean, so I try to keep the insults to a minimum. I'm here, I'm willing to take you to the dance, I'll sit with you during dinner, and give you my bag of chips to buy whatever the hell you want. But that's it. We can either keep arguing for the next 2 hours, or we can haul ass to the party. We might even make it in time for dinner if we move.
I deserve a picture, she insists.
As if on cue, Mrs. Carrington pops around the corner with Mr. Carrington, who's carrying a camera. I sigh. If I don't give in, my guess is we're going to be here all night. Fine, take your picture and let's go.
5 pictures.
1. Her mother's face is a picture of confusion.
Well, perhaps we could take a few by the mantle,
she suggests quietly.
We'll start there,
Jordan agrees. Just a couple ground rules, I murmur so I don't embarrass her in front of her parents. They're already wondering what in the hell is going on. We're not kissing, hugging, or doing couple shit in this photo.
You'll put your arms around me and you're going to like it,
she snipes, and then grabs my sleeve to haul me snug up to her side. Calmly, I pull the fine wool out of her grasp. Be careful, Tom Ford isn't cheap. The tux is custom fit. Every year we get a new one. Dad's a big believer in dressing for the occasion.
Are you ready?
Mrs. Carrington asks, gesturing for her husband to come forward with the camera. After a little maneuvering where Jordan tries to grind her ass against my dick and I try to avoid even our clothes coming into contact, the pictures are taken and we're at the door. Mark Carrington clears his throat loudly as we're about to leave. Mr. Royal, I don't approve of my daughter's choice of dates given your current situation, but I also want her to be happy.
Dad,
Jordan protests. Her father ignores her and looks me square in the eye. I respect that. Don't worry, I assure him. She'll be home by 10. I duck out the door and jog down the steps with Jordan huffing her displeasure behind me.
The party doesn't end until midnight, asshole.
I hold the car door open for her.
Too bad I told your dad you'd be home earlier then. And then there's the after party,
she says between clenched teeth. I wait for her to get her legs inside the truck and stare off into the distance. The skirt on her dress is so short that her panties would show, and it's not something I care to see. I signed up for one winter formal, I retort as I slam the door. Are you going to be like this the whole night? Jordan demands as I settle into the driver's seat. Yup. That's not within the spirit of the deal. Your deal is with Ella, not me. I'm doing the bare minimum here. You're the worst. You and that trash deserve each other. I slam on the brakes halfway down the driveway. My efforts at being nice have their limit, and they stop at any insults toward Ella. Call her trash and the date is off. I'll haul you out of the Rover and leave you on the side of the road. You would not, she says indignantly. I so would. In fact, I'd love to do it. You should be grateful I'm even being seen with you. Really? If it wasn't for you, I'd be with Ella right now. She sputters. Just drive. Some small part of her must realize I'm nearing the end of my rope. I release the brake and ease into traffic. It's 10 to 7. I wonder if dinner's been served yet. Has Wade won any chips for Ella? He's kind of a shit poker player. Ella's probably not very good, either. Her face is too expressive. And Easton's too undisciplined. I press harder on the gas. The country club gates never looked so welcoming. When I pull up, the valet is so bored by the lack of traffic, he's almost sleeping. At the slamming of my car door, he jerks to his feet and runs over to help Jordan out. She must be giving him a good view of her crotch, given the way his eyes bulge out of his face. When we walk inside, the front table is abandoned. I can't believe no one's here to give me my chips, Jordan exclaims. Before she can make a scene, I reach over the table, find a box, and pull two sacks of chips out. Shoving them into her hands, I say, here. Then I push her, none too gently, toward the casino doors. Heads turn as she enters, which is probably just what she intended, because her shoulders straighten and her face gets this weird, satisfied expression. My eyes scan the room looking for Ella. I spot her laughing in the far corner as Wade whispers something in her ear. Two other football players, McDonald Sampson and Greg Angelus, hover to her left. Despite my designated role as Jordan's date, the gravitational pull to be next to Ella is irresistible. I leave Jordan standing at the entrance, basking in the attention of her classmates, to join the most beautiful girl in the room. The moment Ella sees me, she breaks away from the group, a smile filling her entire face. I feel better already. Am I imagining things, or can I see Jordan's tits in that dress? Greg squints toward my date. Why don't you go check it out up close? I suggest, sliding an arm around Ella's waist. It'd be nice if everyone would go the hell away so I could be alone with my girl. I only have so much freedom left, and I don't want to spend it with anyone but Ella and my brothers. I drop a light kiss on her lips. Anything more heated, and I'm bound to drag her off to the nearest dark corner, lift that pretty skirt of hers, and do at least 6 of the million dirty things that run through my mind every time I touch her. Aren't you supposed to be Jordan's date? Ella says. Don't remind me. I brought her, didn't I? But as I look into my girlfriend's stubborn face, I realize I'm not going to weasel out of this at all. Wade gives me a sympathetic look. How about we go play poker? With relief, I take him up on the offer. That I can do. Before we can find an empty table, Rachel Cohen, Wade's midday fuck buddy, comes by, decked out in a slinky red dress with cutouts at the side. Wade, sweetie, I've missed you. The pretty brunette flips his tie with her finger and smiles devilishly. You want to find a quiet place to, catch up? And we all watch with astonishment as the guy who never says no stares down at his feet. Awkwardly, he shifts from one foot to the other as he struggles to find some way to let this poor girl down easy. I can't right now, honey. I'm about to play some poker. Aw, okay. We can meet up later, then? Rachel is apparently a dim bulb and doesn't catch the signal. Wade casts a silent plea for help in our direction. Only Ella responds. Oh, Rachel, I think I see Easton struggling with his cards. The brunette perks up. Really? I was with him earlier and he said he didn't need any help. He's embarrassed. Tell him that I sent you. Ella pats Rachel on the back. Okay, the girl says happily. She takes a couple of steps and then turns back. If you want to join us later, I'm cool with that. See you, Wade. We wait for a few seconds before turning on my buddy. Seriously? McDonald exclaims. That chick just threw herself at you and you said no? You lose your balls or something? Wade scowls. No, I just wasn't in the mood. Dude, you're always in the mood, McDonald says. Greg and I nod in agreement, but Ella is smiling broadly at Wade as if she knows something we don't. I guess it's about Val? I kind of figured Wade was over that already, though. Fuck, whatever. Wade grabs Ella's arm. Baby, I'm your date tonight, and I'm not abandoning you. He drags Ella toward a nearby table, calling over his shoulder. You losers coming or what? I'm out. I tell Wade a bit later as I lose the last of my chips at one of the poker tables. He frowns. You only played $100. I gave the rest to Jordan. He grunts. Is it worth it, being shackled to her all night? Who's shackled? I haven't seen her in an hour. It turns out my date might have a gambling addiction, because she hasn't moved from the craps table since we got here. Not that I'm complaining. The less time I spend with her, the better. And even if she was glued to my side, yeah, it's worth it. I admit. Making love to Ella for the first time was the best night of my life. It's an event I'll replay every night for the 5 or so years I'm in my lonely cell. If you wouldn't do that for Val, then maybe she's not the one for you. I'm 18, dude. Since when do I have to find the one? Wade frowns at his cards, and I don't think it's because he has a bad hand. He's falling for Val and struggling with it. I leave him alone because this is something he needs to deal with on his own. I guess 18 is kind of young to be tying yourself to someone permanently, but I can't imagine my future without Ella in it. I just hope she feels the same way, especially since we'll be separated for the next 5 years. Is she going to wait for me? I know it's selfish to ask, but is it too selfish? You okay? The object of my thoughts, the subject of all my desires, whispers in my ear. I guess I'm frowning as hard as Wade. Yeah, I'm fine. I spaced out for a moment there. Ella squeezes my shoulder. Okay, well, I'm going to hang with Lauren for a bit. You know, since technically I'm not your date, and your actual date is glaring big holes in my back. Ella's only gone 5 seconds when someone softly taps on my shoulder. I turn around to find Abby Wentworth standing there. My chest instinctively softens at the sight of her pale pink dress and flowing white blonde hair. What had drawn me to Abby was how gentle and delicate she is. She reminded me so much of my mom, and being around her was comforting. But now that I'm with a girl who's so full of fire, I don't think I could ever go back to one with the strength of a puff of steam, and especially not a girl who would say all that shit about me to the cops. The reminder has me stiffening. What's up? I mutter to my ex. Can we talk? Even her voice is delicate. Everything about Abby is so damn fragile. Got nothing to say to you, I grunt, drawing startled glances from my friends. They're all aware that I've always had a soft spot for this girl, but not anymore. The only thing I feel for Abby now is pity. Please, she begs. I get up only because I don't want to embarrass her in front of everyone, but the moment we're out of earshot, I pin her with an angry scowl. You told the cops I hurt you, I hiss out. Abby's pale blue eyes widen.
Oh, I...
She visibly swallows and then her expression collapses.
You did hurt me,
she moans.
You broke my heart.
Frustration bubbles up inside me. For fuck's sake, Abby, this is my life we're talking about. I read your statement. You implied that I physically abused you, and we both know that's a goddamn lie. Another anguished moan rips out of her throat.
I'm sorry. I know it looks bad, but I swear to you I'll go back and give another statement and make it clear that you never...
Don't bother, I snap. I don't want you to say another word, you hear me? You've already done enough. She flinches as if I've hit her.
Reed, she whispers. I really miss you, okay? I miss us.
Oh, shit. Discomfort wedges into every crevice in my chest. What the hell do I even say to that? We broke up more than a year ago. Everything okay here? Saved by Satan. I've never been more relieved to see Jordan Carrington in my life, and maybe that's why I lay a hand on my date's arm as if she's actually my date. Everything's fine, I say tersely. But Abby viciously shakes her head. For the first time since I've known her, pure anger blazes in her eyes.
Everything is not fine, she snaps at Jordan,
and it's also the first time I've ever heard her raise her voice.
I can't believe you came with him tonight. How could you, Jordan?
Her friend doesn't even blink. I already explained why I...
Because of your stupid image?
Abby is seething, her cheeks redder than apples.
Because you want to be crowned the queen of some stupid dance? I told you I didn't want you to go with him, and you totally ignore my feelings. What kind of friend does that?
And who cares about your stupid social status?
She's shrieking now, and nearly the whole room is staring at us.
I was with Reed because I love him, not because it helped my reputation.
Again, Jordan is unfazed. You're making a scene, Abigail.
I don't care.
We all cringe at the deafening pitch of her voice.
You don't deserve him,
Abby yells between panted breaths.
And neither do you.
It takes me a second to realize that Ella is at my other side.
Why did you have to move here?
Abby growls at Ella.
Reed and I were doing fine before you got here, and then you showed up in your cheap clothes and your trashy makeup and your whore ways.
Jordan snickers.
And you ruined everything. I hate you.
Her desperate, furious gaze swings back to me.
And I hate you too, Reed Royal. I hope you rot in jail for the rest of your stupid life.
Abby finishes in a breathless rush. Silence has fallen over the room. Every pair of eyes is glued to my unhinged ex-girlfriend. When she realizes it, she releases a horrified gasp and slaps a hand over her mouth. Then she runs right out the door, her pink fairy princess dress flapping behind her.
Well, Jordan sounds amused. I always knew she wasn't the meek little thing she pretended to be.
Ella and I don't respond. I stare at the doorway Abby just barreled through, a weird lump of pity forming in my throat.
Should we go after her?
Ella finally asks, but she doesn't sound like she wants to.
No,
Jordan answers for me, her tone haughty and her head held high. She possessively clutches my arm and yanks me away from Ella.
Come on, Reed. I want to dance. It'll be good practice for when we're crowned king and queen.
I'm still too stunned by Abby's outburst to protest, so I just let Jordan lead me away. Chapter 32, Reed.
So that was intense,
Ella murmurs when we walk into my bedroom a couple of hours later. I stare at her. Intense? Talk about an understatement. This entire night was a disaster, starting with the photos Jordan and her parents made me pose for, and ending with Abby falling apart in front of a room full of people. I almost fell over in relief when Jordan didn't press me about taking her to the after party. I guess the stupid snowflake queen tiara was enough to satisfy her, and luckily I didn't even have to participate in the nausea-inducing king and queen waltz, because Wade beat me out for the king title. The only highlight of the night was watching Wade grope Jordan's ass during their big dance, while she kept hissing for him to stop. Ella and I were able to escape by 10 o'clock, and since Steve's not picking her up until 11, we have an entire hour of alone time. But we're both a little shell-shocked as we sit side by side on the edge of my bed.
I feel really fucking bad for her, I admit.
Abby? I nod. Well, you shouldn't, Ella says bluntly. I hate to say this, but I think Abby might be a tad delusional. I sigh.
A tad?
Okay, a lot delusional. Ella squeezes my hand. But it's not your fault. You broke up with her. You haven't let her on since. She's the one who isn't able to move on.
I know.
But I still can't erase the image of Abby's grief-stricken eyes from my mind. I've run through these last few years with little regard for anyone but myself. I was proud of being an unfeeling asshole. Is this karma? Is me going to prison for 5 years punishment for the guys I've beaten, the girls I've hurt? I've tried to act like nothing's wrong. I've gone to classes, played football, went to winter formal. I've acted as if every day is an ordinary day in the life of a high school senior. But I can't pretend anymore that everything is okay. Abby's not okay. Brooke's murder is not okay. My life isn't okay. Every night, I lie awake staring at the ceiling, wondering how I'll survive inside a prison cell. It's the weight that's the hardest.
Reed, what's wrong?
I take a breath as I meet Ella's worried eyes. No amount of sweet words is going to take the sting away, so I speak abruptly, like pulling off a band-aid. I'm going to sign a plea deal early. She whips around so fast she loses her balance. I reach out and steady her, but she jerks out of my grip and shoots to her feet.
What did you say?
I'm going to sign it early. Agree to start serving the sentence starting next week instead of the 1st of January. I swallow. It's the right thing to do.
What the hell, Reed?
I rake a hand through my hair.
The sooner I go in, the sooner I'm out. This is bullshit. We can solve this. Dinah paid off Ruby Meyer, so that means there's new evidence.
There's no new evidence, I interrupt. It kills me that she's holding on to this dream that something's going to magically appear to get me off. Her inability to accept me going to prison or to understand why I want this sentence over with tells me all I need to know. I can't keep asking her to wait for me for 5 years. I'm a selfish jerk for even entertaining that idea. She'll miss out on everything. What kind of senior year will she have with everyone believing her boyfriend is a murderer? What about college? I may be an asshole, but I'm not this big of one. Not to her, at least. I brick up my heart, the useless, shitty thing, and stare down at my feet because I can't look into her pale, beautiful face while I say the rest of the words that are galloping around my head. We should take a break. I'll be inside and you'll be out here. The bedroom grows so quiet I can't help glancing in her direction. She's frozen in place, a hand to her mouth, her eyes as wide as platters. I want you to enjoy your time at college. It's supposed to be the best time of your life. The words taste bitter, but I push them out. If you meet someone, you shouldn't be thinking of me. I stop then, because I can't get the rest of the lies out. The ones where I'm supposed to say that I won't be thinking of her, that she was just a convenience, that I don't love her. If I say those things, it'll truly be over. There'd be no coming back from it. No way she'd forgive me. Be a man, I tell myself. Let her go. I take another deep breath and gather up some more courage. But before I can open my mouth, Ella flies into my lap and mashes her lips against mine. It's not so much a kiss as it is a slap across my face, a scolding for everything I just said and every awful thing that sits in my throat. And while I know I shouldn't, my arms close around her waist and I hold her, letting her kiss me. The tears fall, sliding between our lips. I swallow her tears, my words, our despair, and kiss her back until she's crying too hard to keep kissing me. I press her face against my chest and feel the tears soak my shirt.
I don't want to hear that crap from you, she whispers.
All I'm saying is that you shouldn't feel guilty about moving forward with your life, I say gruffly. She stabs her finger into my chest.
You don't get to tell me how I feel. No one does. Not you, not Steve, not Callum.
I know. I'm just saying. Hell, I don't know what I'm saying. I don't want her to date anyone else. I don't want her to move on. I want her thinking about me the entire time I'm thinking about her. But I also hate the idea of her being alone, wanting me and not being able to have me, all because I did something stupid. I'm trying to be a better person, I finally say. I'm trying to do right by you.
You decided what was right for yourself without asking me, she says flatly.
I struggle to find the words to explain my position, but then her hands tangle with my belt buckle and all my good intentions fly out of my head.
Ella, I stammer. Don't. Don't what?
She taunts. Her hands deftly unzip my tuxedo trousers, sliding inside to hold me in her palm.
Don't touch you?
No. This time I'm the one backing away. My body throbs with need, but I'm not going to put my own selfish desires ahead of hers.
Too bad. I'm touching you.
She grabs my wrist and holds it against her stomach.
And you're touching me. Do you really want someone else to touch me like this? Are you really going to be okay with that?
The images her words conjure in my head are terrible. The hand I have planted on her ass curls into a fist.
Don't.
I choke out.
Don't say that to me. Why? You said it to me.
I would never, ever be okay with you moving on to another girl. That kind of betrayal would ruin us. Not you going away for 5 years, not a raft full of Daniels or Jordans or Abbeys or Brooks. You moving on, even for a day, for an hour, is what I'd hate. I'm trying to do right by you, I repeat. Damn it, every waking thought I have is about her these days.
Right by me is not rejecting me. Right by me is not dictating how I'm supposed to feel. I love you, Reed. I don't need to be told that I'm too young to know my own feelings. Maybe there is someone else out there that I might love, but I don't care about that person. I love you. I want to be with you. I want to wait for you. What do you want?
Her fierce declaration makes it impossible for me to stick to my guns. My own declaration bursts out of my mouth before I can stop it.
You. Us. Forever. Then don't push me away. Don't tell me how to feel, what to think, who to love. If you're really taking this plea deal, then you can't be too embarrassed to see me. You can't stop writing me. You can't turn away from my visits. This is our countdown. This is our wait. Every day brings us closer together. We either do this together or not at all.
Her blue eyes flash like molten sapphires.
So what'll it be?
Man up is what she's really telling me. Man up and act like a member of our team, the Ella and Reed team. I grab her chin with my free hand and kiss her hard. I'm all in, baby. Then I rip her expensive dress off her body and show her exactly how in I'm going to be for the rest of our freaking lives.
Chapter 33. Ella. On Saturday morning, Steve announces that we're moving back to the penthouse. Today. Today? I echo dumbly, setting down my glass of orange juice. He leans his elbows on the kitchen counter and beams at me.
Well, tonight, actually. Isn't this great news? Now we won't be stuck in these five rooms anymore.
Truthfully, the idea of leaving does sound enticing. Living in this hotel has grown old, which is something I would have never said a year ago, but Steve's right. We do need more space from each other. Steve and Dinah have started to fight constantly. While I might have had a trace of sympathy for her at the beginning, I'm sick at the sight of her. Not only did she pay off Ruby Myers, but I know she's involved in Brooke's death somehow. I just can't prove it, damn it. Reed told Callum about my suspicions, but so far Callum's army of investigators have come up with nothing. They need to find it soon, because if Reed has his way, he'll be signing that plea deal on Monday morning and going to prison the moment the ink is dry. Maybe the penthouse holds some clue. Steve tilts his head.
What do you say? Are you ready to move out?
He gives me a hopeful puppy smile that reminds me so much of Easton. Steve's not all bad. He tries hard, I guess. I can't help but smile back. Yeah, that works.
Good. Why don't you go pack a suitcase with your necessities? The hotel will send the rest of the stuff over. Dinah's called to get the place cleaned before we arrive.
I'm about to answer when my phone buzzes. Reed's calling, and I discreetly cover the screen with my hand so Steve can't see the display. It's Val, I lie. I bet she wants to know how winter formal went.
Oh, that's nice, Steve says absently.
I'll talk to her upstairs so I don't bother you, I say, before darting out of the suite's kitchen. He nods off in his own head to another topic. Steve's biggest flaw is that if the conversation doesn't involve him, he quickly loses interest. Once I'm alone in my room, I answer Reed's call before it goes to voicemail. Hey, I say softly.
Hey.
He pauses.
I spoke to Dad about the waitress. Figured I should let you know.
The waitress? Oh, I say, realizing he means Ruby Myers. My pulse instantly speeds up. What did he say? Do we have proof that someone paid her off?
She took out a loan, he says flatly. Her mom died unexpectedly and had a small life insurance policy. Myers used that to put a down payment on the car. No signs of any wrongdoing there.
I swallow a frustrated scream. That can't be true. Dinah all but admitted she paid Myers off.
Then she did it in a sneaky way, because I've got a copy of the loan papers.
God, I know Dinah's involved in this. Panic ripples through me. Why aren't these investigators making any progress? There has to be something that doesn't point in Reed's direction.
Even if she did, Dinah's plane didn't land until hours after Brooke's time of death.
Tears fill my eyes and tighten my throat. I slap a hand over my mouth, but a muffled sob filters through. I have to go, I manage to say, my voice only wobbling a little. Steve wants me to pack so we can be back in the penthouse tonight.
All right. I love you, baby. Call me when you get settled.
I will. I love you, too. I hang up quickly and then bury my face into my pillow. I close my eyes and let the tears flow just for a minute, maybe two. Then I tell myself to stop feeling sorry for myself and get up to start packing. Brooke died in that penthouse. There has to be some kind of clue there. And I intend to find it. Hours later, Steve hustles me into the lobby of the swanky high-rise. Dinah's already inside waiting for the elevator. She barely said a word on the ride over.
Is she nervous about revisiting the scene of her crime? From the corner of my eye, I watch her avidly for any signs of guilt. I'm going to put you in the guest room, Steve babbles as the three of us step into the elevator. We'll have it redecorated, of course. I frown. Isn't that where... I lower my voice, even though we're in a cramped space, and Dinah can hear every word. Brooke was staying before she, died? Steve frowns back. Was she? He turns to Dinah. She nods stiffly and answers in an even stiffer voice. She sold her apartment after Callum proposed, so she was staying at the penthouse until after their wedding. Oh, I see. I didn't realize that. Steve looks back at me. Are you all right staying in that room, Ella? Like I said, we'll have it redecorated. Yeah, it's fine. Morbid as hell, but it's not like Brooke died in that room. Nope. She died right there, I think, as we enter the posh living room. My gaze instantly lands on the fireplace mantle, and a shiver runs up my spine. Steve and Dinah are both looking in that direction, too. Steve is the first one to turn away. He wrinkles his nose and says, "It stinks in here." I inhale deeply and realize he's right. The air is kind of stale. The apartment smells like a weird mix of ammonia and old socks. "Why don't you open the window?" Steve suggests to Dinah. "I'll crank up the heat and light a fire." Dinah is still staring at the fireplace. Then she makes a distressed sound and runs down the hall. A door opens and then slams shut. I stare after her. Is that guilt? Crap, how do I know what guilt looks like? If I killed someone, I'd run to my bedroom too, right? Steve sighs. Ella, can you get the windows? Glad for something to do that takes my attention away from the crime scene, I nod and quickly move to the windows. Another shiver overtakes me when I pass the fireplace. God, it's creepy here. I have a feeling I won't be getting a wink of sleep tonight. Steve calls in a delivery order, and it arrives about 15 minutes later, filling the apartment with a spicy aroma that might have smelled good if my stomach wasn't churning from anxiety. Dinah doesn't come out of the bedroom, refusing to answer Steve's summons for dinner. We need to talk about Dinah, Steve says over a plate of steaming noodles. You're probably wondering why I haven't divorced her yet. It's none of my business. I push a green pepper around my plate, watching it make tracks through the soy sauce. I haven't given the marriage much thought. I'm too obsessed with Reed's impending imprisonment. I'm arranging things, he admits, and everything needs to be in order before I start the paperwork. It's really none of my business, I repeat more forcefully. I don't care what Steve does with Dinah. Are you going to be okay living here? You look creeped out, I supply. He smiles slightly. Yes, that's as good of a word as any. I'm sure I'll get over it, I lie. Maybe we'll find something else, you and me. I'll be gone to college in a year, but I reply with, sure. Because I don't want to see Steve's disappointment. Right now, I can't handle anyone's emotions but my own. I was thinking that you could take a bridge year and not go to college after you're done with school, or maybe we could hire a tutor and go abroad. What? I say in shock. Yes, he says, sounding increasingly enthusiastic. I enjoy traveling, and since Dinah and I will be divorced, it'd be great if you and I went on a few trips together. I stare at him in disbelief. He flushes slightly. Well, think about it at least. I clamp my lips tight around my fork so I don't say something hurtful, or worse, stab him with my fork for such a ridiculous idea. I'm not leaving the state of North Carolina until Reed can. After dinner, I excuse myself. Steve shows me to the guest room down the hall from the dining area. It's nice enough, all cream and golds. The design and setup isn't much different than the hotel room we left. I have my own bathroom, which is nice. The only downside is that a dead woman once slept in this bed. Pushing aside the thought, I unpack my school uniforms, a few t-shirts and jeans. My shoes and jacket go in the closet. Next to the bed, behind the nightstand, I find an outlet for my phone charger. I plug in my phone, and then lie down on the bed and stare at the ceiling. Tomorrow I'll look for Gideon's stuff. I doubt it's in this room, though. Dinah wouldn't let the blackmail evidence far from her sight. But maybe if Brooke was sleeping on it, it would be just as safe. I hop off the bed and look under the frame. The hardwood floor is clean, and none of the boards seem to be loose, which would be a telltale sign that something might be hidden underneath them. How about between the mattress? It takes a few pushes to get the mattress on its side, but there's nothing underneath it but the box spring. I let it drop down with a thump. I do a quick search of the nightstand, where I find a remote, 4 cough lozenges, a bottle of lotion, and a spare set of batteries. The dresser has extra blankets in the bottom, extra pillows in the middle drawer, and nothing in the top one. The closet is empty. Dinah or the cops must have had Brooke's clothes taken away. I run a hand along the wall and stop to inspect the bland abstract painting hanging over a thin console table across from the bed. There's no secret safe behind the painting. Frustrated, I collapse on the bed. There's nothing in this room but normal items. If no one had told me that Brooke slept in here, I would have never known about it. With nothing to search for, my thoughts drift back to Reed. The large room suddenly feels oppressive, as if a heavy fog settled into the space. Things are going to be okay, I tell myself. 5 years is nothing. I'd wait twice that to have Reed back. We'll be able to write letters to each other, maybe even talk on the phone. I'll visit him as much as he lets me. And I do believe he can control his temper if he wants. He has a huge incentive. Good behavior equals less jail time. There's a silver lining in every cloud, Mom always said. Granted, she said that mostly when we were leaving to go to some new place, but I believed it then. Even when she died, I felt like I'd survive, and I did. Reed's not dying, even though it feels like I'm losing someone yet again. He's just going on an extended vacation. It'd be like if he went to college in California and I was here. We'd have a long-distance relationship. Phone calls, texts, emails, letters. It's pretty much the same thing, right? Feeling marginally better, I get up and reach for the phone. Except I forget I didn't put my suitcase away and end up tripping over it. With a squeaky cry, I fall into the console table. The lamp on top of it teeters. I grab for it, but I'm too far away and the damn thing crashes to the ground. "Everything okay in there?" Steve asks from the hall, sounding concerned. "Yeah." I look at the shattered remains of the lamp. "Well, no." Sighing, I walk over to open the door. "I tripped over my suitcase and broke your lamp," I confess.
"Don't worry about it. We're redecorating, remember?"
He holds up a finger. "Don't move. I'll get a broom." "Okay." I bend down and start chucking the pieces in a nearby trash can. Something white pokes out from underneath one shard. Confusion wrinkling my forehead, I ease the paper out. From the way it's hastily folded and tucked against that one piece, I realize someone deliberately slid it inside the white porcelain base. Maybe it's the instructions for the lamp? Yeah, probably. My hand is halfway to the trash bin when the word Maria catches my eye. Curious, I unfold the paper and start to read. Then I gasp.
"What have you got there?"
My head swivels to the door, where Steve is standing with a broom in his hand. I want to lie and say nothing, but I can't get my vocal cords to cooperate. I can't hide the paper either, because every muscle in my body is frozen. Looking concerned again, Steve leans the broom against the doorframe and marches over.
"Ella," he orders, "talk to me."
I look at him with wide, frightened eyes. Then I hold up the paper and whisper, "What the hell
is this. Chapter 34. Ella. The paper crackles as I hold it between my trembling fingers. My mind is spinning with the few paragraphs I read, and I'm not even finished reading. Before I can blink, Steve snatches the letter from my hand. As he scans the first few lines, his face drains of all color. "Where did you get this?" he chokes out. My mouth is so dry with shock and horror that it hurts to talk. "It was hidden in the lamp." I continue to stare at him. "Why did you hide it? Why didn't you destroy it?" His skin is as pale as mine probably is. I didn't hide it. It was in the safe. He curses suddenly. "That goddamn sneaky bitch." My hands won't stop shaking. "Who?" "My wife." He swears again, bitterness darkening his eyes. "My lawyers would have given Dinah the codes to the safe after my death." His fingers tighten, crumpling up the paper. "She must have seen this and..." No, it would have had to be Brooke. He looks around the room, visibly shaken up. "She stayed here. She was the one who hid it. She must have stolen it from Dinah." "I don't care who hid the letter," I shout. "All I care about is whether or not it's true." My breathing goes unsteady. "Is it true?"
"No."
He pauses.
"Yes."
Hysterical laughter spills out of my mouth. "Well, which is it, yes or no?"
"Yes."
His Adam's apple bobs as he gulps. "It's true." Disgust and anger shoot through me. Oh my God, I can't even believe what I'm hearing. This letter changes everything I knew about Steve, Callum, the Royals. If it really is true, Dinah had every right to be furious with Maria, to hate her even. "Let me read the rest of it," I order. Steve takes a step back, but I grab the paper from his hand before he can move it out of my reach. The corner tears off and remains between Steve's limp fingers.
"Ella,"
he starts weakly, but I'm too busy reading. "Dear Steve, I can't live with these lies any longer. They're tearing me apart. Each look from Callum weighs on my heart. This isn't the life I imagine for myself, and not one that I can continue to pursue. My sons are the light of my life, but even they don't shine bright enough to erase the darkness in my soul. The stains of our actions will always be there. I don't know what to do. If I confess, our families will be torn apart. Callum will leave me. Your friendship will be severed. If I keep quiet, I will not live. I swear to you, I can't go on. Why did you take advantage of me? You knew my weakness. You knew and exploited it. I no longer believe that Callum has been unfaithful, or even if he has, I must learn to live with it. We can't continue like this, Steve, hiding the truth from Callum. I need to tell him. I have to. Otherwise, I won't be able to live with myself. But while I can't live without Callum, I don't know that I can bear to be without you, either. You do things to me, bring me alive in ways I didn't think were possible. Every night when I close my eyes, I see your face, feel your touch. When that other woman is near, I burn with anger. Why would you marry her? She's beneath you. Knowing that you go from me to her disgusts me. You ask me to leave Callum, but I don't trust you either, Steve. I don't believe you. I don't believe in anyone any longer. There's no choice for me. All of them have been taken from me. Don't try to stop me. Maria. Once I'm finished, I let the letter drop to the carpet at my feet. This is so crazy. How could Steve do that to Callum? How could Maria? I need to tell Reed, I blurt out. Steve lunges forward before I can get my phone off the nightstand.
No, he begs. You can't tell him. You'll tear them up. Those boys worship their mother.
So did you, apparently, I say bitterly. How could you do that? How could you?
Ella, fear and hope and